It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. They're here to deconfuse the Office 365 SKU disaster. We talk about a few good things Microsoft is doing, then Microsoft saves the internet. Kinda. Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 370, recorded Wednesday, July 9th, 2014. Office 365, SKU-a-palooza. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Carbonite. Whether you have one computer at home or several at your small business, Carbonite backs up your files to the cloud automatically and continually. Plus, access your files anytime, anywhere, with a free app. Start your free trial at Carbonite.com. No credit card required. Use the offer code Windows to get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Windows. And by audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers Microsoft and all the going-ons at Redmond. Whether it be for your home, for your business, for your enterprise, we've got the knowledge that you need, and that knowledge comes from our wonderful host, starting with Miss Mary Jo Foley from All About Microsoft. Mary Jo, thank you for being here. It's always great to see you, and of course, I can't see you without mentioning the yellow earbuds, because I think I do have some jealousy about those. I really do.
I think I've got to get you a pair of these.
I've got to see someone about that, because it gets me every single time. But it's lovely to have you back. Thank you.
Thanks for you being back as well.
Oh, well, you know, when Leo emailed us and said, well, we were thinking about extending our vacation. Would you mind doing Windows Weekly again? And it was just one of these, no, I would hate to. It would be
cool. Right, I'm not doing that. And then there was an ultimatum, and it doesn't really matter. It got ugly. The point is, here he is again.
And you know who else is here? Mr. Paul Thurrott. He's the mastermind behind the super site for Windows, the winsupersite.com. Paul, to you as well, thank you for bearing another week with me.
Oh, I'm happy to see you.
Yeah, yeah. It's been actually a pretty eventful week for Microsoft. There's been lots of going on, some good, some not so good, but all with good intention. Mary Jo, I think you're gonna kick us off, right?
Yeah, I can kick us off. The biggest question I think both Paul and I were getting all week this week was about Android, which is interesting since we're talking about Microsoft here. And it all stemmed from a tip that the mobile leaker named Ev Leaks, who's Evan Blass, posted up early Monday. He said, there's going to be an Android-powered Lumia phone coming out from Microsoft. And that really got everybody in a panic. I should say it got everybody who's a Windows phone fan in a panic. Yep. Not everybody, but yeah, because
everyone who matters, I think, is
our people got in a panic. And the reason is Microsoft has done some dabbling with Android on Windows phones. They do a thing called the Nokia X phone. But this is a whole different thing. This is Lumia high-end smartphone, something brand new. And people were not too happy to hear that possibly could have Android as its main operating system. Even if it's an Android open source project, people still were not real keen on this. So then Paul wrote a really good post about, could this be Microsoft's plan B? And I'll let him kind of launch into that. But I thought he brought up some good points with that.
Now, the interesting thing about this is Lumia has had some of the most beautifully designed hardware, I'd say, in the last 3 years. Yep. I mean, I'd even place it above the iPhone. It's been saddled, and I'm saying that in a negative way, but even though I actually do like a Win phone, with an OS that doesn't quite meet up to the expectations of the hardware. And one of the things that I most like about the Lumia cameras phones is their camera. Their camera is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, I would in a heartbeat trade in my phone if I could get an Android device that has Lumia's with design camera, and Lumia's camera. If they do that, and if this becomes successful, I mean, if this becomes the Android phone to use, Paul, what happens to Windows Phone?
Right. I don't want to contemplate that. It's interesting that you bring up the camera part, because I had also written something about the Lumia 1020 this past week, which is the phone that came out a year ago this month. And I actually still use that day to day, which is kind of an amazing thing, because as you may understand, I mean, I have all kinds of devices coming through here every week. I have my choice of devices and I'm using a phone that came out a year ago. That's actually pretty amazing. But for all of the wonderful qualities of that camera, there are issues that are, in fact, related to the hardware. Windows Phone at the time, of course, was made by Microsoft, which at the time was a separate company from Nokia. So Nokia couldn't add some low-level functionality to the camera software because they didn't have access to the OS. Likewise, Windows Phone doesn't support certain hardware features that would have made the camera in the phone operate more quickly or more efficiently. If you compare that camera from the 1020 with like the PureView camera from, I forget the name of the device, the Nokia 92 or whatever that was that came before the first PureView, there was some optical hardware in there that they were able to do when they were controlling the hardware platform. And so I'm not saying that going to Android would actually fix that problem. It's possible that just combining Nokia and Microsoft can help get that stuff moving along. But absolutely, starting behind as they did with Windows Phone, you're kind of always playing this game of catch up. And it's true in the apps department, obviously, the online services that are supported on the platform. And it's true in the hardware. There are some pros to the hardware stuff. You know, Windows Phone runs more efficiently than Android does on the same hardware and so forth. But the point remains. So, you know, there are all these permutations of what Microsoft could be doing. I have heard almost nothing about this. We know that they're doing the X phones that Nokia first started, which are those AOSP, the Android Open Standard, and not full-blown, you know, Google Play Android. I have some theories or some ideas about how Microsoft could combine the Android platform with Windows Phone software. And, of course, as Mary Jo has talked a lot over the past year, Microsoft is working in some way to combine Windows Phone and Windows RT into something, you know, in some threshold era combination of those products. So it's a lot. It's a big topic. And if you're a Windows Phone fan, it's a tough thing to even contemplate, I guess.
We have two Windows Phone users in the Brick House, and we're going to lose one. He is finally going to be moving away from his Windows Phone. He gave it a good year and a half.
Who's leaving?
Phones. It's Tony.
Who is that bastard?
Tony. So you can find Tony. He's in the back over here. But Tony, he said, happened? You know, he missed his apps. And he said, this is a beautiful phone. It's a great phone. I love the camera. Our Windows Phone users are always showing off the camera. And they do take the best pictures of all the phones in the Brick House. But he just wanted something more.
Mary Jo, I don't know if you saw my photo of Toronto yesterday.
Yeah, I did see that.
I'm just walking through a hallway at an airport. I turned and took a shot with the 1020. And it looks like a postcard. I mean, it's gorgeous. And that's what those phones do. I mean, we went to Europe for 3 weeks last August. My family photos from that trip, I'm sure over 1,000, I don't remember exactly, 1,500 photos, whatever it was, all on the 1020. Beautiful. The best vacation photos we've ever had. But you know, it's not just a camera. So, I mean, that is, absolutely that's a problem.
And, you know, part of the problem was a lot of people were calling out on Twitter to me and Paul and saying, can you guys say this isn't true? Can you disprove it? I looked into this tip a lot this week about will they do an Android-powered Lumia? And I could not disprove it. I couldn't prove it, but I couldn't disprove it either. And I asked Microsoft for comment and got absolutely nothing. I didn't even get a no comment. I just didn't even get a response, which is very unusual for them. Frank Shaw, who's the head of corporate communications, put a tweet out saying, oh man, it looks like it's crazy rumor Monday, but it wasn't really clear which rumors he was talking about.
Right. But then he would say that he is Microsoft's mastermind of communication. So
Right. Right. So I don't know. I wonder, I kind of ended up wondering if it might be a branding thing, because we do know that Microsoft is in the midst of trying to figure out the branding between Surface and Lumia. And now that Nokia is part of Microsoft, how do you bring that name in, and can you, how long can they hold on to the name and continue to use it? So I kind of wondered, maybe this is a branding thing where they're going to rebrand the Nokia X maybe as a Lumia, but I think that would be super confusing if they do that.
I do too. And we just talked about this, didn't we, last week?
We did.
Over Surface versus Lumia. I mean, why don't we, you know, further confuse the Lumia brand by making, Android devices with that name? I hope they don't do that.
Now, what's the end game here? I mean, let's say that this is real, and let's say that they go ahead and they create an Android-powered Lumia, complete with all the great camera hardware, complete with a great design, complete with a great battery life. I see this falling two ways. One is that they price the phone so high because they want to protect their Windows Phone partners that no one's going to buy it, or it becomes phenomenally popular because they price it about right. And now it's up to them to explain to their stockholders, why are they supporting the dying Windows phone when their Android phone is selling so well?
There's no win here that is not controversial, right? Mm. There's no way that you win where everyone's happy, where everything makes sense. Microsoft exists in a world where they are not the primary platform maker anymore, and so it behooves them to put their online services and apps on other platforms. You can't do the Windows first, Windows only thing anymore. It doesn't make sense for them to survive and thrive in this new world. They need to do this other stuff. Now, they do want Windows to succeed, obviously, and they would prefer it if you used Windows on the desktop, on a tablet, on a phone, whatever, up in the cloud, obviously. And maybe they will make certain things better on Windows if you choose to do if you choose to go that route. But you know, you can't just abandon the future because Windows either. I mean, they can't just not move forward with this other stuff. And this is where, you know, this is Microsoft's kind of unique position. They're never going to make everyone happy. Our past is littered with the remains of fans of products of things like Zune and Media Center and on and on it goes, you know, who will still tell you to this day that that thing is better than whatever they replaced it with. That it's just not, you know, we're never going to make everyone happy. It's just the way it is.
But I'll tell you who they're going to make really unhappy if they do this are developers. And man, that's the constituency that I worry about the most, because some people have been early developer partners of Microsoft on Windows Phone and Windows 8. They took a lot of risks. They haven't made probably as much money as they might have if they didn't.
But imagine what if they move the Windows Phone runtime? I guess it would just be the Windows runtime, so that it ran on top of AOSP. So in other words, what if the plan was in fact to have a single hardware device or a hardware platform, I guess, that could run Android apps, that could run Windows Phone apps, right? And that they would continue to improve and put this runtime environment on these devices. And so even though it was Android under the covers or AOSP, what if that didn't matter to the typical developer? What if you could just move the app there unchanged? What if you could make certain changes to make it better on such devices? I mean, what if it wasn't, a complete either or?
And I think there's a lot of very smart people who are thinking the same thing, which is, well, Microsoft's moving into cloud services. They could just develop a really, really good Android skin, an Android platform that runs Microsoft Cloud Services really well. But then you have to ask yourself the question, and the stockholders will ask the question, well, then why did we buy Nokia for $3 billion?
Right.
I mean, you bought them for the hardware, right? But the question is, does Microsoft really want to stay in the hardware manufacturing business? Because that's also been something that's been up for debate, because the margins on hardware are so much lower than the margins on software and services. So a lot of people are speculating that if Microsoft ends up trimming some staff in the near term or not too far away term, that it could be done through eliminating some of the manufacturing plants that they bought from Nokia. You know, they keep the people who are doing the design work. They keep the people who are associated with the patents and software and service development, but they might, this is just speculation, they might try to get rid of some of the people who are actually building the handsets, have it outsourced. That's a theory.
Right. I mean, I think what Nokia would have told you a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, was that their manufacturing expertise is what made it possible for them to make devices like the Lumias with their unibody design and so forth. I'm sure that's how they would have promoted that. You don't have to look too hard to see something like an Apple iPhone or iPad to realize that you don't have to build your own devices to make absolutely beautiful devices, that this can, in fact, happen through a third party. But you have to think that those manufacturing jobs represent 2/3, 3/4, you know, or more of all of the employees they just picked up, right? I mean, wouldn't most of Nokia, you know, the part that Microsoft bought, wouldn't most of that have been involved in those activities? Not in design, not in...
Right. A lot. I'd say that tens of thousands, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting idea. But you touched a minute ago, Paul, on something that was another rumor this week that people were asking about. And I think it was Elder Muratsen who came up with this rumor that the way that Microsoft's going to actually support Android on Lumia is by having a virtual machine be on it. And instead, it won't be the operating system, the entire operating system itself, but maybe just the apps or the runtime plus the apps. I don't know exactly how that would work.
I hope that's not how they do it, because that is a really garbage approach.
It seems crazy on a phone to me.
Yep. It seems like a really, really good way to eat a battery life. That's what it sounds like.
Yep.
You're basically
to never have a good experience for anyone where here's a device that we're going to advertise as being Android compliant. But, oh, by the way, it doesn't run that one app that you love.
Right.
I just see that as a non-starter.
Yeah, I think at this point it comes down to either they're going to build a really, really good Android device, or they're going to build a really crappy Android device that's very crippled so that it doesn't compete with Windows Phone.
And both of those suck. I think back, and you can go, by the way, you can go back to the beginning of Microsoft. Microsoft creating versions of other people's platforms, right? Microsoft had a CPM, I believe, add-in card for the Apple II. They had Xenix, their version of Unix, that they probably bought and then updated from some other company. They did OS 2 with IBM, of course. They did their own version of Java, J++. That went really, really well. There's a good model to follow. This type of activity doesn't usually work out, historically. I mean, I'm not saying this, it couldn't be different this time, but their track record isn't necessarily so great. So it's nervous. I mean, AOSP is an open standard of sorts, I think, as suggested by its name. So, but as some commenters to some of my posts have noted, you know, putting your fate in Google's hands is not necessarily the smartest thing to do when Google is your number one competitor. I this whole thing is just disturbing on a number of levels.
Yeah. I'll tell you one other theory I heard from one of my sources is that this supposed Android Lumia device is an experiment, quote unquote. Yeah. And that, you know, Microsoft's trying everything, right? Like they've got a lot of prototype hardware out there where they're saying, hey, what if we did this? How would this look? How would it work? And the thing is, how widely are they showing this off and to whom are they showing this off if it is an experiment? Right. I mean, I even had somebody say to me, who actually is pretty well sourced in Microsoft, that the Nokia X2 is an experiment. If that's an experiment, I think a lot of developers are going to be very angry because Microsoft is out there recruiting people to build apps for that device and really spending a lot of money on it.
Like real human beings buying it. Yeah. You can't call something like that an experiment. That is not okay.
Wait, let me throw some crazy in here. So Google buys Motorola. We need a little bit of crazy. Google buys Motorola. And the whole idea behind that is they want to show some of the handset manufacturers, this is how you do it. This is how you make a good phone. We want to put a little bit of pressure on you to build better devices. And then they were able to, a few years later, sell it off and say, look, mission accomplished. We did what we had to do. There are now some great Android phones out in the wild, and we don't need to do hardware anymore. Is there a scenario where Microsoft can do the same thing, or are they stuck with this?
First of all, what you just described is a fantasy. So, I mean, that's not what – I mean, but Microsoft in the PC space did what you described sort of through the Signature program, which is like the Google Play Edition phones. They have Surface, which is like the Motorola thing, I guess, although they didn't buy that company, obviously. And we're talking about PCs, not phones here. But they did buy Nokia, which is a lot like when Google bought Motorola on the Surface, because, I mean, really, Google bought Motorola for the patents and Microsoft bought Nokia because if they didn't, that company would have either gone out of business or would have adopted Android, which would have been the worst possible blow imaginable to Windows Phone. So it's kind of a different situation thing. But I keep going back to, you know, Nokia is such a huge part of the Windows Phone experience. Even if you don't buy a Nokia phone, it's a huge part of it. But if you go back to before Nokia entered this market, and you think back to what were the original differentiators of the system, it had nothing to do with camera quality, which was a Nokia thing. It had nothing to do with the quality of the hardware, which was, by the way, a Nokia thing. It was just the software system itself, how unique it was and how different it was, and not different just to be different, but different, really thought through to be better. It's almost like we've kind of lost sight of what was really special about Windows Phone, because frankly, it just didn't resonate with enough consumers to make a difference. We're focused on things like the design of the device and the quality of the camera. If Microsoft ships an Android device that has those two things today, in today's world, Windows Phone is dead. That's the end of it. You would be crazy to ever buy a Windows Phone if you could get an Android device with that camera in that body, you know? The things that made Windows Phone so special, and I think still do in many ways, although they've been by necessity filtered down a little bit over time, as you know, you get a feel for how people like to do things. And it should be noted, iOS and Android have both picked up a lot of the integration things that were previously unique to Windows Phone. So, you know, what are we, 4 years down the road? I mean, a lot of things have changed, but I mean, Microsoft could stick the final nail in the coffin, so to speak, just by releasing this thing we're talking about, to release an Android phone with a PureView camera and, you know, a Lumia unibody, whatever. That would be the end of it. I think that would be the end.
It might be the end. Actually, yes, it would be the end. My scenario is if they release a decent Android phone on the Lumia platform.
This is like my worst nightmare, like writ large. If you want to know what keeps me awake at night, you know, aside from things like my family and, you know, like the normal human being things. I actually this type of thing really troubles me. Like, I actually spend more time thinking about this kind of stuff than I'm even comfortable admitting. Like, I'm really worried about this because I feel like something special happened here and that it's possibly being ruined.
I know. And the thing I think that Microsoft really would do well to do at this point is, I know they don't want to come out and start denying every rumor, because that's a no-win situation. They'll just be spending their whole life denying every rumor. But there's certain rumors that get picked up really widely. They get people in a panic, especially your developers and your loyal customers. And at that point, you just say to somebody in the press, that rumor is wrong. That's all they have to do if it's wrong. The silence is what's getting people more worried, I think, because everyone's speculating what this might mean and, you know, what are they going to do? Are they going to kill Windows Phone? I think they just need to stop this one.
You know, the caveman that saw Halley's Comet, and now we think, you know, the gods are coming to punish us or something. I mean, we don't know any better. You know, it's like we almost need that kind of parental hand to say, you know, it's okay.
You know, Mary Jo, if we could stop for a second, I'm very concerned about Paul right now. He seems to be getting very, very depressed. So
right.
I want to break away from that. But you know what, Paul? When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the Surface, because I know that always brings you up, right? Your happiness. Yes?
I'll try.
Okay, we'll try.
Actually, Padre, before we go, I just want to, going back to something, because I didn't have a chance to throw this in earlier when it was relevant, here's that picture Paul was talking about, I believe.
Wow. That does look like a postcard. That's amazing.
And by the way, I mean, literally, I'm walking in a connector between a building and the plane, look left. I see this. I just take a picture and then I get on the plane. Then I look down at the picture and I'm like, oh my, look at this thing. Like, this is really nice.
And that's not using any crazy filters. You don't have HDR.
No, I literally just popped the thing on, wow, took it, and kept going.
See, that's the sort of picture I want to be able to take with my phone.
So, Paul, did you do the hashtag no filter?
No, you can assume anything I post is that.
No filter. Go figure. Now, we do need to take a break to thank the first sponsor of this episode of Windows Weekly. And, of course, that's Carbonite. Now, I tell the story a lot. I talk about how I set up systems for some very un-tech-savvy people. That's sort of my main business. And, well, one of the things that I always run into is backups. People not understanding how backups work. I always try to explain the 3-2-1. You have to have three copies, two different places, one other type of media. But, or actually that's backwards. But they don't really get that because they think that just by putting something into a Dropbox or putting something into the cloud will somehow fix everything. That somehow their file, their precious memories, their data will be co-located and therefore immune from disaster. But that's not how it works, folks. Just because you put something in the cloud, just because you put something into a off-site storage doesn't mean that it's protected. It just means that you have another copy that could be just as easily damaged if it's not set up for backup. Folks, that's what Carbonite is. Online, off-site, in the cloud backup that's easy to use, and really it can fit any budget. Now, Carbonite is what you need if you want to back up your computers at home, at your small office, at your workplace, wherever it may be. It's so easy to forget. We know that. We all want to back up. We all want to have those good practices. We all want to be the person that says, yes, I'm not worried about a disaster, but it takes time. It takes energy and it takes thought. And sometimes we just forget. But with Carbonite, it doesn't matter. Because all your computers, all your servers, all your external hard drives will be backed up to the cloud for you automatically. Now, you can also access those files. This is a big plus. In this way, it is a lot like some of those cloud storage companies in that you can look at the files that you've uploaded. They're not packed away in some weird compression so that you have to download the entire file. You can just log in and say, oh, I need this particular file, get that back, and you're good to go. But with Carbonite, you don't have to worry about it not happening because it's going to happen whenever you're not doing anything on your computer, whenever you have bandwidth to spare, and it's completely customizable. It's one of the things that I've always really liked about Carbonite. And Carbonite has affordable plans. No matter what you want to spend, no matter what your needs are, you can find a plan that fits you. It's one of the things that Carbonite excels at. No matter how many computers you have and no matter where they're located, Carbonite can fix your storage problem. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to start your free trial today at Carbonite.com. You don't need a credit card. And if you use the offer code Windows, you get two free bonus months if you decide to buy. Folks, treat yourself right. Treat your data to what it deserves. Back up with Carbonite. That's Carbonite.com, offer code Windows. Carbonite.com and the offer code Windows. And we thank Carbonite for their support of Windows Weekly. Now, Mary Jo Foley, maybe you could bring us into some of the Surface news. I was really, really looking forward to the Surface Mini. That's the size format that I want. And I understand that I could get that soon, right?
If you believe the rumors this week. Speaking of rumors again. So this is another rumor from Ev Leaks, who we just talked about as the person who is powering the Android-powered rumor. He also came out with a rumor this week that said, by the way, Microsoft has restarted production on that Surface Mini that they were going to launch, and it's coming out this summer. I can tell you, after looking into this rumor, I am about 99.9% sure he is wrong on this one.
But that's 0.1% I can dream, right?
Yeah, I just don't think this is happening. And, you know, here's why. Microsoft canceled the Surface Mini launch that was supposed to be May 20th because Gemini, which is its touch-first Windows apps that you need on an ARM-based device, were not ready yet. They still are not ready. Nothing has changed since May. So I don't understand how or why they suddenly would say, hey, let's roll this device out that we canceled because Gemini wasn't ready and it wasn't a differentiated enough device. It just doesn't make sense. My sources say no on this one.
That's a little sad. Yeah. Now, Paul, I know that you have clear information that the Surface Mini was supposed to be released. I know that it got yanked at the last minute. I know that there are hilarious little incidents of the references made to the Surface Mini in manuals and press releases. But, yes. I mean, is it dead? Did they just decide, no, we're never going to release this device?
To be clear, that could happen. I mean, at some point in the future, the most recent information I have is that it has been delayed twice, because originally it was supposed to come out last fall with Surface 2 and Surface Pro 2. Then it was supposed to come out, I think it was May 20th, alongside the Surface Pro 3. In fact, the Surface Mini was the primary device they were going to announce. The Pro 3 was sort of a sideshow of sorts at the time. I had gotten a ton of information about the Surface Mini, and really all I had heard about the Pro 3 was, oh, and by the way, there'll be a new Pro device with a bigger screen. And I kind of had to probe a little bit about that one because, obviously I was curious about that. But really all the information was the Mini was the focus. And as I think Mary Jo just said, it was canceled literally days before the event. And they manufactured these things, and they're sitting in boxes, and, you know, who knows? The problem is, as time goes forward, the hardware architecture that's inside of those devices gets more and more out of date. And so at some point, if Surface Mini happens, they may need to make new versions with new hardware, too. So it's kind of hard to say.
Yeah, that magic time is about 12 months. You have about 12 months before your hardware can no longer be released as new hardware.
And so, if I'm not mistaken, those the internal design of this hadn't changed since last year, too. So even a June, July release for this device, it would have been 9 months into that 12-month period you're talking about.
Now, but they did manufacture a few units, and they did have a very short
production run. That's what we've been told,
So,
yeah, we hear thousands, but although neither of us have seen one. But
they're sitting someplace.
Well, you know, that room that's in the end of The Raiders of the Lost Ark is, of course,
where they are. Okay.
I'm just waiting for these to show up on eBay somewhere. I'll snatch one up. Super rare Surface Mini.
I would love to see one. I mean, and the thing that was funny about that event for me when we went to New York for the Surface Pro 3 launch was they kept, you know, they were talking about specific attributes of this device, and it was like checking off everything about the Surface Mini, except that the screen was humongous and it was running, you know, Windows 8.1 Pro and not Windows RT. There were a lot of similarities between the two of them, and it's just the Mini was literally shrunk it down to a smaller screen size.
Web0769 in the chat room says that they're probably in a New Mexico landfill next to ET cartridges.
Yeah.
So sad.
I still think they're going to do this product at some point, probably next year once the Gemini apps are ready. And I think if they are going to do anything with the ones they've built, they'll probably salvage them for parts, or they'll take them apart and replace the chip, or they'll do something to what they've already built. These ones they built were supposedly test devices. And I don't know if I'm sure some people outside the company had them. I've talked to one person inside the company who says he has one, that he actually
they
has.
They were probably for reviewers. They were probably the ones they were going to give away at the event.
It's
a sad reality that every time we talk about Microsoft, it kind of comes back to this they can never win message. And the truth is, if they had shipped this thing right now, it would have pleased a certain group of people, but there would have been others who would have said, RT is a dead platform. Why didn't you do 8.0, 8.1 core or whatever? Intel would have been better, yada, yada, yada. And if they release this thing in the fall, if they release this thing in the spring, if they wait for Windows 9 or whatever, they're going to be people who say, oh, too little, too late. You know, the mini tablet craze came and went, and Microsoft is behind again, because in some ways the mini tablet craze has kind of gone and went. You know, that segment of the tablet market was driving tablet sales for about a year, year and a half there, and that's actually died down considerably. In fact,
the entire tablet field has died down.
Yeah, but I mean, I believe that sales of full-size tablets are, in fact, the majority of that market again. And part of the thing that took away from mini tablets, of course, is phablets. And so maybe in 2018 or something, Microsoft can come out with a phablet. I don't, it just seems like they're always a little bit, I know that is a 15, 20.
You know what? You know what? I think this device could fly next year if they kind of change how they position it and market it. Like, what if they position this as the Courier? Remember the Courier? It was supposed to be this dual screen, really cool notebook that you could write in and annotate in. This is the Courier pretty much with one screen, right? So I don't know if they could call this a note-taking device or not necessarily kind of lump it in with all the other mini tablets, just doing all the same things, but make it something very specific to note-taking, right?
I actually think that device would be wonderful, and that Surface Mini today would be great. I'm just giving you my expectation of the perception of it, you know, that this is how it will be perceived. In other words, there are absolutely people who read what we write and listen to this podcast, and you and I too, who want this kind of device, need this kind of device, are looking forward to this kind of device, are going to be very happy to have it. But the public perception, because, you know, it's Microsoft and this is the way things go. And that's the sad part of this is that, you know, it's just never going to please everybody. They need something that pleases everybody. Can we make one of those?
Yeah, well, I was just thinking, we need something to bring us back up. We've been kind of doing a downer since the start of the show.
Yeah.
Paul, talk to me about everyone getting firmware. That's a happy thing, right?
Except I go on Twitter today and people are saying, I'm not seeing any firmware updates today. All right, so basically I know. This is my lot in life, you know. Basically, every Surface model ever made has gotten a firmware update today. I believe the non-LTE version of Surface 2 did not, in fact, get a firmware update. But if you have Surface RT, Surface Pro 1 or 2 or 3, Surface 2 with LTE, you should be getting at least one update. Many of them have several updates, and it works the same way as it did for all of the previous months, going all the way back to October 2012, if I'm not mistaken, where at least some of the devices are getting these updates. And it's all the hardware-related stuff. I'm not sure firmware update is always the right word. I noticed that in some cases they refer to it as a hardware update, but a lot of it has to do with the integration between the hardware of the device and the software. So it's something we might have called a driver update in the past. I think it's a little more sophisticated than just drivers, but And this stuff is all over the map. Power covers and type covers. And I think on the original Surface RT, there's a hardware update for the start button that's on the device itself, you know, the Windows button. So it's all over the map. But if you have any Windows device, you should be getting your Patch Tuesday updates automatically anyway. I think people with Surface devices, it makes sense to go and manually check for updates and then download them, because those firmware updates are important and can really improve matters. And then, of course, there's more. Mary Jo has a bit about some more stuff coming, I think, next week.
Yeah, there's. Well. So I already gave back my Surface Pro 3, so I couldn't try this out myself. But there was a wireless update this week for the Surface Pro 3. But then Microsoft threw in this little note on the Surface update page and said, by the way, on July 16th, we're going to come out with more Wi-Fi updates for the Surface Pro 3. And I don't know how much you guys have been paying attention, but there's a lot of people having Wi-Fi connection issues with the Surface Pro 3. There's a huge thread online about this. And I don't know if this update that came out this week does anything to fix that. I've had some people say, yes, it does. But there's going to be another update next week that I think is supposed to be very much specifically about the Wi-Fi patching.
Yeah, there. I think the right way to say this is that if you have a Surface Pro 3, you are having Wi-Fi problems. You just may not know it, because some of the problems are connectivity related. You would clearly know about that. But some of them are throughput related. In other words, like the speed you're getting off of the wireless router. You may not understand it. You may not realize it's happening. How would you? I mean, unless you were really paying attention to it. But I believe that this impacts Surface Pro 3, period. I think this wireless issue is a problem across the board for everybody. I experienced it very early on. And because of the stuff that was going on with the Connect Standby / Hyper-V stuff that I was doing, it wasn't really clear what was what. But I noticed I took the Surface Pro 3 with me away on this most recent trip. And aside from my just general connectivity issues across every device I own, the Surface Pro 3 was perhaps the most vexing, let's say. It was the worst of them all.
That was the issue with the bandwidth burps, right? You'd see if you were actually watching it, you'd see your throughput dip and valley. It was very strange.
Yeah, and I see this is the type of thing I don't really do, but I had someone tell me that they had installed some kind of an update. I don't know what possesses people to even monitor this stuff, but they somehow knew that they were getting some kind of range of speed before this update, and then they installed this Surface update, and then they were getting, you know, a fifth of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think most people would just have a vague understanding that, wow, this seems really slow, or it's not working, or why is my home internet connection, which always works, marked as limited, and I can't get online. You know, there's just a bunch of stuff. And so Mary Jo is right. She said that there was a little bit about Wi-Fi in this firmware update, but that next week should hopefully addresses the rest of it. Because I think there are actually three issues, if you will, with the Wi-Fi on Surface Pro 3 overall, but hopefully they'll all be fixed.
And most of the time when you see those sorts of problems with Wi-Fi, it has to do with the way that they're handling battery management. They can cheat, and they can basically turn off the Wi-Fi radio at times and then turn it back on. And if they guess intelligently, you won't even notice that it was off. It saves a ton of power, but if you do this wrong or too aggressively, you get issues.
And you know, this is what I would say to people who don't like this new mobile world we're entering into and want everything to be the way it was before, with just PCs and no touch and all this kind of stuff. The problem is that we are moving into this future. And so the PC, which has been an amazingly versatile device, and Windows, which has been an amazingly versatile piece of software, has been updated and updated and updated over the years to accommodate all of these new technologies. And it is these things that screws up Windows and Windows PCs the most. These transitions between new power management states, the way that hardware integrates with the power management, whether it's the processor itself, which also multi-cores and they could ratchet down and go back on and all that kind of stuff. The wireless hardware like you're describing. This is the stuff. This is the weak link today. You know, as we make this constant evolution to the future with the PC, because the underpinnings of this system, they're 35 years old. You know, it doesn't work well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're basically replacing the engine in a car you're still driving. Every time we update one of these components,
it's a 72 strange. Super Beetle, but it has a Cadillac engine in it. It's a very strange thing, ultimately.
Speaking of strange things, Mary Jo Foley has some information about Microsoft support deadlines. What are those?
Wait, I hope I'm not the strange thing in that segment.
Hey, Mary Jo Foley. Right.
Yeah, so this was a very funny story. I'm sure Paul has this happen to him a lot, too. I read a post earlier this week about some of the Microsoft support deadlines that are coming up over the next year. I tried to make it really, really clear in my post about whether these were mainstream support ending or extended support ending or just complete end of life for the product. And for people who don't know what these distinctions are, mainstream support means you get free support from Microsoft. You get feature patches, you get product updates, and you get security fixes and patches for free. That's usually like a 5-year period from when they launch the product.
And to be clear, it's the first 5-year period.
It's the first 5 years they launch. Then there's another 5-year period after that, which is called extended support. And what happens during that period is you don't get the feature updates for free anymore, but you do get security fixes for free for those 5 years. The main product that's entering the end of mainstream support and is worrying a number of people is Windows 7. Windows 7 and Windows 7 with Service Pack 1 are going to end the period of mainstream support January 13th, 2015. It's not that far away. But for 5 more years after that, till 2020, you can still use Windows 7 with no problem because Microsoft's going to keep giving you free security updates to the product. Okay, so I wrote this post explaining this very clearly, and the headlines that came up on the web were Microsoft's killing Windows 7, Windows 7's dead, Microsoft pulling plug on Windows 7 in 7 months. I mean, the headlines were crazy, and people were bombarding me with emails saying, my boss is freaking out. I have to talk him off the ledge. Why did you write this post? And I basically said, you know what? You should read my post and not some of these other posts where people are doing clickbait headlines. You should just read the explanation of what these different phases are and don't get into such a panic. So what is happening is end of mainstream support for Windows 7 is happening next year unless Microsoft extends that like they did with XP because so many people are using it, especially business customers. We don't have any evidence that they are planning to extend that right now. The other products that you should know about that are also ending support on the in January 2015 include Windows Server 2008 and Windows Server 2008 R2, Dynamics Nav 2009, Dynamics Nav 2009 R2. And next year, as we brought up on last week's episode, Windows Server 2003 is ending all kinds of support, not just extended, not just mainstream, but everything, on July 14th, 2015. Those are your main dates to know. There's other things. I have a link in my post about some of the other dates and products. The other big one that people have been asking about is Office 2010 with Service Pack 1 installed. That the support for that ends completely this October 2014. But what you can do in that case is just upgrade to the next Service Pack, and you don't have to worry as much about that. Just go to the next Service Pack. One more that people have been freaking out about, Windows Phone 7.8. Mainstream support ends for that September of this year. But that, again, you still have extended support for another 5 years, which means you're still going to get security fixes for 5 more years beyond that.
But no one's using Windows Phone for 5 years. Like, you,
I know.
You replace your phone every 2 years.
I know. People are freaking out, Paul.
I still have a Windows Phone 8 device. I've got
7.8. It says 7.8.
No, I've got one of those. I've got one of those.
Okay. Well, it's going to be supported for 6 more years.
Actually, I got emails this morning from some of my my friends on the East Coast who were freaking out over this. They're like, oh, my God, are they going to kill Windows 7? I'm thinking the only reason why you're paying attention to this right now is because of everything that's happened with XP. And right. You're thinking yeah. that right. I'm like, but have you actually read?
You realize that XP was 8 years older than Windows 7.
Yeah.
Eight. Mm-hmm. And by the way, here's something to put this into a little bit of perspective. Apple released the first iPhone 7 years ago. Does Apple support the first iPhone? Imagine Apple supporting the first iPhone. That's how Microsoft supports Windows 7. 2 years from now, that will be the same amount of time, and they'll still have 3 years to go on full on extended support.
But Microsoft is evil.
Oh, sorry, I didn't get the memo.
All right, so that's.
I'm sorry, just to sort of complete the thought on the whole Windows 7 thing. Windows 7 is interesting in a number of ways, but you know they released one service pack and then that was it, and a lot of people have said, you know, why aren't they going to release a Service Pack 2? Or when are they going to release a Service Pack 2? What's going on? If you've ever resuscitated a Windows 7 PC, you know you face a bewildering ramp, 597 software updates and Windows Update, whatever it is. I'd love to see something like that. But honestly, given that situation, I mean, the difference between today and tomorrow and a year from now, 4 years from now, as far as like support goes, what is the difference? I don't think this impacts anybody. This transition is a non-event. It's
again. You know, I think the only reason why we're paying attention to it is because we hit the XP end of life.
Yeah,
and people are thinking, oh, this is going to be the same thing. Well, no. I mean, first of all, there's a whole lot of years between now and then, and secondly, XP is, I think it's an outlier. I don't think you're going to get that again.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they extended support for XP several times. And I think there's a big learning to be had here on Microsoft's part where they clearly learned that doing so was not necessarily such a good idea and that they weren't able to get businesses off of that system as quickly as they wanted to. And that's something they're going to work at a lot harder for Windows 9, let's say, or Threshold, whatever they call it, to get businesses moving on to that, let's say, or Windows 8 or whatever, rather than sticking on Windows 7 for many, many years going forward. I think Mary Jo last week was talking about the possibility that next Windows version could be free for Windows 7 and 8 users. And we don't know if that's happening or if that's just a possibility or whatever. But that kind of a move would really help, I think, get people upgraded, right? Which is something they didn't, you know, they didn't really throw a lot of bones at XP users because, let's face it, they had extended support for so long that if they had rewarded people for staying with the old thing for so many years by giving away a free copy of Windows, I mean, I think it would have kind of sent the wrong message to those people who did upgrade.
Bottom line, everyone, back away from the ledge.
It's nothing to see here.
We're here for you. Now, when we come back, Mary Jo Foley and Paul Theroux are going to talk a little bit about some interesting changes to Office 365.
Just to be clear, we're going to talk a lot about it.
We're going to talk a lot about it.
This is not a little topic.
It's not. And actually, I see in my notes here the blog post parsing tears. I don't know exactly what that means yet, but I know I'm about to find out.
I needed some help this morning. Let's put it that way.
I think we just found out why Paul is in that dark cloud mood.
Yep.
But you know what? Let me tell you what's not going to put you under a dark cloud mood, and that is having a one-stop shop for getting your great idea, project, portfolio online. So that's why we welcome to the show the second sponsor of this episode of Windows Weekly, that's Squarespace. Now, Squarespace is a one-stop shop for all your needs in publishing content to the internet. If you've ever tried to do it yourself, and if you're not all that tech savvy, you understand the difficulties in trying to gather together all the different services and pieces that you need to create a popular blog or a portfolio or a visual website. You have to contract from one company for your domain registration, then from another for your hosting, and you're probably going to have to gather together some open source software packages so you have your back end and your front end. Maybe you're using WordPress. Maybe you got MySQL in the back. Who knows? And if you use Squarespace, you won't have to. Squarespace is the one-stop shop for all your content needs. Now, they are constantly improving their platform, which is why I love talking about Squarespace. They're not one of these companies that's content to sit back and look at what they did and said, well, it looks okay, it's running, let's just leave it alone. No, they're always adding new features, they're always adding new designs, and they're always giving you even better support. They've got beautiful designs, 25 templates for you to start with, and recently they added a logo creator tool, which is a basic tool for individuals and small businesses with limited resources who want to create a simple but powerful identity for themselves. It's also very easy to use. If you want help, Squarespace has live chat and email support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but you're not going to need it because you can always find the answers online in their FAQs. Plus, there is a completely redesigned customer help site for easier access to self-help articles and video workshops. They also support e-commerce. Now available for all subscription plans, Squarespace includes the ability to accept donations, which is great for nonprofits, cash wedding registries, and school fund drives, and it's inexpensive. It starts at just $8 a month, and it includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Squarespace is always mobile ready. The new Squarespace metric app for iPhone and iPad allow you to check site stats like page views, unique visitors, and social media followers. With the blog app, you can make text updates, tap and drag images to change layout, and monitor comments on the go. In other words, you're always connected to the site, to the portfolio that you're building. Even their code is beautiful. We all know that Squarespace looks beautiful on the outside, but what's also amazing is that all the code inside is beautiful as well. Squarespace takes just as much pride in their back-end code as they do in their front-end design, and that just tells you that end-to-end, they know what they're doing. A Squarespace also takes care of the hosting, so you don't have to worry about that third party that you're paying another bill to. No, you pay one company, and they take care of everything for you. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code Windows to get 10% off and to show your support for Windows Weekly. We thank Squarespace for their support of Windows Weekly. A better web awaits, and it starts with a new Squarespace website. I almost loathe to come back into this, but hit me. Microsoft's making some changes to Office 365, and I take it that neither of you are very happy.
No, I wouldn't put it that way. They're good changes once you figure out what's happening.
Yeah, you should set the stage.
Very couched. Very couched. Well done.
Yeah.
All right. So, this morning, Microsoft published information about major changes coming to the small and mid-sized business version of Office 365. There are three of them. Office 365, small business premium, and mid-sized business are the names of the SKUs. So
let me tell you what happened. Paul was in a fetal position under his desk.
Paul needs to go beat up a pillow or something. Paul, we'll cut you off for a sec.
Paul was in a fetal position under his desk, and we were IMing, and he was like, "What? I can't understand this blog post. Help me. Walk me through this." So then we started going back and forth trying to help each other figure out what this blog post said, because it was kind of convoluted. But I think Paul did a nice write-up of once he unraveled it.
First of all, I should say, I feel bad for how much I bothered her today about this topic. At one point I said something to the effect of, "I promise you I will not." And then I said, "Actually, I can't promise, because I know I've already asked about 42 questions about this, and something tells me I can promise I will try not to bother you further." But I don't know how to say this. I love Office 365. I think it's a great product line. I think that it makes a lot of sense. It is a no-brainer for families on the consumer side. It is close to being a no-brainer for small businesses on the business side and for enterprises, of course. But if there's a downside to Office 365, it's that there's too much of it. There's like this explosion of versions and SKUs and services you can tack on, and it's really hard to get it into your head. And by the way, you know, a week ago or 10 days ago, I wrote an article called Office 365 Primer, because I have so many questions from people who don't understand which is which. You know, they'll hear about I just heard that OneDrive for Business is being upgraded with 1 terabyte of storage. I have Office 365 Home Premium. When do I get that? Well, you don't get that. That's an offering for the business versions. And I figured I would just clear up the whole thing and write a really long post explaining all of the different stuff. And here we are 10 days later, whatever, they've already changed it all. So in the fall, they're changing the offerings that they're giving to small businesses and to mid-sized businesses. The way they describe it, it's not fair to say it's inaccurate, but they don't do a good job of saying, if you have this now, here's the new one. If you have this now, here's the new one. And they completely skip over the fact that one of these things they're describing is, in fact, a new version of a product called Office 365 Pro Plus, which they don't even mention in this post at all. And it's a kind of convoluted thing, because if you are currently a subscriber to Office 365 Small Business or Small Business Premium, the net effect is that you can move forward pretty seamlessly. You'll pay no more. You won't save any money, but you'll pay no more with the new plans. You'll get some additional services that frankly probably won't matter to you. And so it's kind of a net. I don't want to call it a win, but it's fine. It's no big deal. If you're on the mid-sized business plan, there are significant savings to be had, and so that's of course good news. But they just what's it going to change the name of everything? And they threw it all into a blender, and it's really hard to parse.
Well, we've got several people in the chat room who are saying, Daddy Thurrott, could you just explain to us what's the difference between business and pro? Just give us that, please.
As my head explodes. Business and what? So maybe Mary Jo, as the voice of reason and as my yoga master, perhaps could.
I'm not the voice of Sauron, though. That's
French. No, you're not. you are a treasure. Let's be clear here. She really, really helped me with this today, because
I think you were just overtired.
They just did a terrible job of explaining this.
They did. And, you know, here's the really quick way to think about the three plans, right? Office 365 for Business is just software that's priced as a subscription. You can install the Office apps on up to 5 PCs. Okay, there you go. Office 365 Business Essentials is no software, but only services. So this is if you want Exchange Online, Link Online, SharePoint Online. That's the one to pick. If you want both, if you want the software and the services, you want Business Premium. Those are the three SKUs. That's what you need to know. The part that Paul and I were kind of crying over this morning is how they're going to roll this out. This is how they're going to roll this out is super complicated. And I would advise anybody who's thinking about this to go read their blog post and see if you can figure it out any better than we did. But the short version of this is Microsoft's turning on these new plans on October 1st this year. If you want to get them, you can proactively upgrade to them right then. but they're advising people to wait. And they're saying, you know what? Just wait until your subscription's going to renew of your current plan. And at that point, is you can upgrade to these new plans. So they're not going to stop you from upgrading, I don't think. But they're also not encouraging you to upgrade. And to sweeten the deal and try to keep you happy as long as you aren't upgraded, they're throwing in some new freebies for you. Well, not I wouldn't call them freebies, but new features. So an example is everybody's going to have a seat cap of 300 on those three new plans starting October 1st.
It used to be 25 for the small business versions.
Guys, why is it so difficult for Microsoft to explain this stuff in language that people understand? I don't get it. This happens time and time again.
Yeah.
This is incredible. Because we've only hit the tip of the iceberg so far. But go on, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Another thing they're going to do is, what's another thing they said? People who are paying more now for Office 365 mid-sized business, when you upgrade, I think they're going to reimburse you for the period of time when they are changing the price. So you won't lose money. You're going to get your money back. It'll be, I'm guessing, retroactive till October 1st, 2014. But then they had a bunch of caveats in this thing, like some customers will be unable to opt in and they won't be able to move to the plans. We don't know which customers those are. So you might be in that unlucky group. We don't even know who they are or why at this point. Paul and I are both going to be at the partner show next week. And they are promising they're going to help us understand more details in person while we're there. So I hope they will do that.
So I haven't read it. It could read like the gibberish that, you know, the guy in The Shining was writing when he was plotting to kill his family. But I tried to write a post that summarized this in more accurately, maybe, than Microsoft did, I guess. And so it doesn't read, hopefully it doesn't read as insane as the actual act of writing it was. But the way I think of this, see, I approach this like there are people who subscribe to Office 365 now. What will they be moving to and how will this impact them, right? So if you have an Office 365 small business subscription today, you're paying $5 per user per month, $60 a year, and you get the online services, Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, Link Online. You will upgrade to, migrate over, whatever, to Business Essentials, which is the same basic product line as some additional stuff. You get a new cap on users, which, again, I don't think impacts small businesses at all, but whatever. There's some Yammer and Active Directory integration, which I don't think is going to impact too many small businesses either, but whatever, it's there. Same price, good, simple. I don't know why they couldn't have just said that. I don't know, but I'm telling you now, it's simple. I'm just, you know. They don't mention a product called Office 365 Pro Plus in their post at all. No. It's one of their offerings. It costs, it's $8.25 a month. It's $100 a year. It is the software as a subscription that Mary Jo was just talking about. It's the Office suite. You can install it on up to 5 PCs. And I think you get a terabyte of OneDrive for business storage as well, or you will soon. They don't mention it. I don't know why, but Office 365 Business is that exact product from what I can tell.
No.
It's,
guess what,
no,
Paul?
It's not. Great.
It's not.
Okay. Why?
Sorry, I'm going to make you cry again. At least one thing is missing from the new Office 365 Business. Access. Access isn't in there in the new plan, but it is in the Pro Plus plan.
Of course. Good. So this is something new. That's great.
Yeah. All right. Add that to your chart. Yeah. All right. See, somebody at Microsoft, this must make sense to some department at Microsoft. So licensing is getting together and they're saying this is going to make us a lot of money.
They need to work on this. They really need to work.
And you know what's sad? I was at the partner show last year and there were a lot of partners who said, we compete with Google head to head in the small business space in this area. Yep. And what makes them very successful in SMBs is their plans are very, very simple and very clear cut.
You mean their plan?
I think they have two, don't they? Yeah.
Okay. Right.
And so you could just go into a customer and say, here's what you get if you're going to subscribe to Google Apps or Google Docs. And Office 365, okay, you get a ton of choices and a ton of features, but there's no elevator pitch. There's no way to explain this thing in like a minute. right? You have to you get this and that. And
it reminds me, when I was looking for a car last year, I went to a Toyota dealership nearby, and we were looking at, it doesn't matter what kind of car it was, some kind of car. And this vehicle with this kind of seat, you couldn't get heated seats. And we live in Boston. It gets cold in the winter, and heated seats would make a lot of sense. And the sort of shyster auto dealer guy said, oh, no, don't worry about it. We can add heated seats to this vehicle. We do that here. It's not a Toyota thing. It's something we could do. And my wife and I looked at each other. We were like, ugh, give me a break. And we're not buying a car here. And we left. That's what this reminds me of. It's like there's all this stuff. You know, it's like here's a million options, you know. And it's too bad because Office 365 is so great and is a good value. I mean, I currently pay for Office 365 Small Business Premium. Which will become Office 365 Business Premium. And they've kind of melded it together with what is currently the midsize version. And you get Office on 5 PCs. You get the online services. You will soon get the 1 terabyte of storage. It's $12.50 per user per month, $150 a year. Nice. But, you know, you can do all this. You can buy Project. You can buy Visio. You can buy Dynamics. I can buy more storage, the standalone storage product. It's almost too granular.
Yeah. Good way of putting it.
I understand why they're doing it. I mean, they believe that in offering all these different plans, they allow for the granular control for businesses, enterprises, individuals to pick exactly what they need. But the end result is it's ridiculously confusing.
Yeah,
it is. It is. That's exactly what it is. You know, the great part, Mary Jo kind of hit the tip of this bit, but, you know, because it's like a business product and Microsoft supports it in a certain way. And they know that businesses are leery about moving to online services. And so they want to give them the kind of guarantees that they can and so forth. They have a policy where they will provide 12 months of notice to any changes to the core subscription. So if your upgrade is due, upgrade, right? So you pay annually for Office 365, you could pay per month, but it's an annual subscription. And so let's say you're due in September. And so September comes and you renew, and it's 1 month before the October 1st switch over to these new versions of the service. And then October 1st comes and Microsoft says, hey, by the way, we just changed, you know, we now have these new versions and you can migrate over at any time. You'll either save money or it will be no cost difference at all, depending on what kind of subscription you have. Would you like to do it now? You can say no. And you can keep saying no. And then October 1, 2015 comes around and you subscribe again. Because you're still in the old plan, you can keep going. And now you have another, you could literally keep using what will be a deprecated version of Office 365 all the way through, I believe, September 30th, 2016. Like why? You know, like why? It's the same thing. It's just the same thing.
Yeah. No, but it's not the same thing because they have different SKUs. I mean, I think you fail to see that.
You're right. I do fail to see it.
Yeah, there's so many SKUs. And we're not even getting into, like, people who say to us, what about the home version? What about the personal version? Which both are called Office 365, but really have no real connection with these other things that are called Office 365.
Yeah. They don't.
Okay, folks, I'm going a little crazy. Can we step away a little bit from the doom and gloom? Because I actually have a good story about Microsoft. They did something right. Can I talk a little bit about that?
Dying to hear about that.
Okay,
one.
Good. All right. So back in 2012, and Mary Jo covered this extensively, Microsoft bought StorSimple. It was a company that specialized in cloud storage solutions. Well, in 2013, Microsoft made the bold proclamation that StorSimple was going to become their next billion-dollar idea, their next billion-dollar company. We didn't see a whole lot until just now when Mary Jo Foley wrote an article about how Microsoft has just announced two new StorSimple arrays. It's the 8000 series, the 8100 and the 8600. Now, these arrays are baked with Azure services. They have Azure StorSimple Manager and Azure StorSimple Virtual Appliance. Now, to be clear, these are not private cloud in a box, which I'll ask Mary Jo to talk about in just a little bit.
which is basically taking your own little bit of Azure and tucking away into your premise. The idea behind these arrays is it gives you a nice, easy way to have on-premise storage that can be managed through the cloud and automatically can use Azure services as its backup. So think of an enterprise solution that you don't have to worry about backing up. It's a very simple idea. I had to read this a couple of times to make sure that that was just it. Yep. But then I realized, no, simple is good. I mean, we just talked about Office 365 being so complicated. This is a good idea. You buy the storage array, and now you don't have to worry about juggling tapes or juggling hard drives. You've got Azure services on your back end taking care of all your data backups. This is actually a good idea. I mean, I could really see this booming for Microsoft, especially if they increase the level of integration both with Azure services and with Windows Storage Server. Mary Jo, you covered this. I mean, are you excited about this?
I knew you would be, Padre. I was like, hey, Padre's going to be on the show. He likes enterprise, and this is like hardcore enterprise, right? Yeah, I think it's cool. I think it's a good and interesting thing they're doing. This is like a way that people who have some data that they frequently access and some data that they don't frequently access can kind of divvy those two things up and put the non-frequently accessed data in the cloud and keep the frequently accessed data on-prem if they want to do that. I mean, you could also make this your disaster recovery solution. There's a lot of different things you could do with this. And I was wondering what Microsoft was going to do with Store Simple. We just didn't hear a lot about it ever since they did buy the company a couple of years ago. So it's intriguing to see how they're tying into Azure with this and how sadly, I've had a couple people note that the first versions of the Store Simple arrays that they came out with are not going to support Azure, the new Azure services, the two that you mentioned. But these new ones are, and they're going to be available starting August 1st. So that's very soon now. I think it's good. I think it's going to help Microsoft convince some more people to dabble with the cloud through kind of a hybrid cloud approach. So goodness, I think.
Where this really helps Microsoft is now they've got a serious contender in the software-defined network category. This is, yep, by definition, a software-defined network resource. As you said, if you can dynamically allocate storage and decide what can be in the cloud and what can be on-premise all within the same storage manager, then you can also tie that into the whatever you're using to control your software-defined network. I mean, this is a fantastic solution. I mean, maybe we're not talking it up enough, but this is different. No one else is doing this. This is a true hybrid cloud solution for storage, and it's hooked in to an established cloud service player. It's great. I mean, this could be a billion-dollar idea.
Yeah.
Can I ask some questions about this product? Because at 11 a.m. this morning, this Office 365 thing happened and my head imploded. And then this also happened. And I have to say, I did not have the mental faculty to handle this story after the other one. This is a rather complex topic as well. So this is, in fact, on-prem storage. It's not designed to be a sync point to the cloud per se. It's not a front end to cloud-based storage. It is literally a storage array that sits on-prem.
It is a physical storage array that sits on-prem, but it has Azure baked into it. So as Mary Jo was saying,
it has the Windows Server Azure services are in it.
Right. Well, there's two Azure services that are built in. They call it the Store Simple Manager and the Store Simple Virtual Appliance. What you can do is, because it's a cloud-based hybrid storage system, you can decide what stays on-prem and what goes in the cloud.
And now, you manage that from your Azure Cloud web admin interface, whatever.
And where this becomes exciting is if you are an IT manager, one of the most painful tasks you have to deal with is storage, either backing up storage or increasing the storage plan. Yep. Well, this gives you a way to use just that single array and decide, you know what, this stuff hasn't been accessed for 10 months. We're going to push it up to the cloud.
Push that up to the cloud. Good. Okay.
Nice.
Good. And this obviously targets larger businesses. This is not a small, mid-sized business offering necessarily.
Right. No, yeah. Definitely not. No.
Yeah.
And I assume no one else is bothered by the fact that they're using the word appliance to refer to something that is, in fact, a rack-mounted, humongous piece of Terminator machinery.
That's an appliance. A refrigerator is an appliance.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, what's confusing here is Microsoft won't call it an appliance, right? They call it a storage array, but the, what makes it a little bit confusing is they have the virtual machine that's called virtual appliance in this. They don't want to call it an appliance, but when Store Simple was a standalone company, they used to call their product an appliance.
Okay.
Of course, Microsoft Marketing is coming in next week, and they're creating three different versions of Store Simple. That will be Business, Essentials, and Pro.
Enjoy. No, wait for the home and personal versions, too. It will be a USB drive. They'll call it Store Simple to Go.
Store Simple-er.
Yeah.
Now, Mary Jo, actually, this is also a companion piece to Microsoft announcing the private cloud in a box. That's actually interesting as well. That should be its own announcement. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I can, but the reason you haven't heard a lot about it is they haven't announced it. This is a little sources of mine telling me things that weren't announced yet type of a story. So back in 2010, Microsoft announced that they were going to do a kind of Azure in the box type thing where they had a bunch of partners, including HP and Fujitsu, and I think IBM also, who are going to build servers that Microsoft was going to pre-configure in racks and sell to customers that they could run on premises. And, you know, a couple years went by, nothing really ever happened. And I kept asking Microsoft, hey, where's the cloud in the box thing? And they're like, oh yeah, it's coming. It's coming. And it never came. And finally, my sources said they killed it. I think they officially killed it inside last year. And of course, didn't announce that it was killed. But now, interestingly, they're going to come back, I hear, and try this again. There's a new appliance type thing that my sources are calling it an Azure appliance, codenamed San Diego, which is kind of interesting. And I don't know when this is going to come out, but Microsoft is going back to the drawing board again. They're going to take some off-the-shelf commodity servers. They're going to pre-install them in racks. And this time around, they're going to use the Windows Azure Pack, now I guess just called the Azure Pack, which provides some of the cloud services that Microsoft has with Azure that you yourself as an IT shop or a partner can run on premises. And that's what's going to be kind of the guts and the heart of the appliance this time around. It's going to have, it's going to make use of Windows storage spaces. I hear Microsoft may directly sell and support this. So I don't know what that means in terms of how partners will be involved. I'm sure there'll be some partner angle where they integrate this with your Azure cloud or your other on-premises apps. And this is supposedly coming sometime. I can't even say this year, next year, I don't know when, because it seems like early days from what my sources are saying. But this thing does exist and has a code name. It's out there, and I'm not exactly sure where it is on the roadmap.
I mean, this is clearly it's a piece of hardware that's designed to assuage the fears of IT people who worry that they're going to be cut off from their services if they put everything in the cloud. If it's your private cloud, you control it, you maintain it, you secure it, and you have access to it as long as you have access to your physical plant. And that's a good thing. And since it duplicates Azure services on a small basis, it also means that everything you do can very easily be pushed up to the cloud.
Right.
Nice.
And you know, it's a good way to get some of these larger IT shops who are still kind of dragging their feet about the cloud to maybe try the hybrid cloud approach. You know, hey, my data is still on-prem. I am using some of the things that people call cloud services, but I'm not really going all in with the public cloud. So it's kind of like a way for them to wade in, I think Microsoft's hoping.
Right. A little toe in the shell.
Yeah, a little toe.
I like that. Now, when we come back, Mary Jo, Paul Theroux, do you think maybe we could talk about how Microsoft saved the internet? Maybe.
Sure.
Benefit the many and disadvantage
the
few kind of thing.
The benefits of the many outweigh the thing of...
Everything comes back to Star Trek, doesn't it?
Long and on Windows. No, but first, let's take a break to thank the third sponsor of this week of Windows Weekly. And that is, of course, Audible. Audible is the number one purveyor of audiobooks and audio treats. They have more than 150,000 titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, or my personal favorite, sci-fi fantasy. Now, for listeners of Windows Weekly, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service, and we recommend that you do. In fact, I think we have a couple of audiobook choices. Last week, I was telling Mary Jo and Paul about The Martian,
by, I believe it was David Weir. I even forget the author. I was so engrossed in it. I downloaded this probably about a month ago for my trip from Las Vegas back to the Bay Area. And I tell you, it was 10 hours long and it gripped me. It was one of those books where I sat in the parking lot of our house in San Francisco for about 30 minutes just so I could hear the end of it. It was one of those driving lot moments. And Paul, I know that you had a choice that you wanted to talk about, right?
Yeah, I have friends who have started a publishing company in France called Le French Book. And they, for much of their careers, actually do translations of between English and French, you know, in France. And so they started this publishing company so that they could bring French books to the English language. And so I've read some of these, and they're most of them are actually pretty good. And one of them in particular was very, very good. And recently they started making Audible translations as well. So it's in English, obviously. I wouldn't be recommending a French book per se, I guess. But two of the books from Le French Book are available now on Audible. And one of them is the one I like quite a bit. The interesting thing is the readings are a little different. So I've actually read both of these books. The book, and I've read them in you know, on a Kindle, but the book that I like the most, I actually think the reading is a little stiffer, unfortunately, at least based on, you know, the sample you can get on Audible. But the two books are called The Greenland Breach by Bernard Besson, and I want to say Bleiberg or Bleiberg, I mispronounce everything, so it's Le Project Bleiberg by David Kara, which is a great book, and it is like kind of like a Bourne, Jason Bourne type book, actually. It's kind of a neat story. And my hope is that there will be more of these things. I think there might be maybe in the original French, and that more will be coming to English as well. But these are cool. They're cool little books.
It's what you said, like Jason Bourne type stories.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. And the publishers, and the French
that
book.
A lot of the books that they publish have kind of a French connection, if you will, in the sense that they'll be recognizable as French, if that makes sense. A lot of them are mysteries and thrillers and things like that. But, you know, they have titles like The Paris Lawyer or what was one of those excellent ones? I don't see it. Treachery, Treachery in Bordeaux, you know, that kind of thing. So it's kind of a neat little business that they have going, which is cool. And the books are good, but now they're available on Audible as well.
There you have it, folks. If you want something a little cultured, maybe with a little international flavor, try the titles from the French book.
Yep.
Paul Theroux highly recommends it. I would suggest you check out The Martian and see if you can figure out all the challenges that you might have to face if you were to be abandoned on Mars. Is that a spoiler? I think that might be a spoiler. Yeah, he gets abandoned on Mars. One audiobook you may consider downloading is, of course, mine, The Martian. The other would be one of, I'm going to call him Jason Le Bourne. What was the title of those books that you liked again?
Which one? Oh, the other one is called, I say I'm going to mispronounce it, but it's like The Bleiberg Project.
Fantastic.
Or Bleiberg. And I'm going to hear about this one because I didn't pronounce it correctly. But yeah, there it is. David Kara. Yeah.
Make sure to go to audible.com/windows to get your free trial and your free audiobook. That's audible.com/windows. And we thank Audible for their support of Windows Weekly. Now, we just talked a little bit about some great moves that Microsoft is making in the enterprise. Mary Jo and I, both enterprise people, very happy with what we see. So now let's talk about how, I couch this in good intentions, how Microsoft planned to save the internet from some horrible, horrible spammers, horrible, horrible malware, virus hackers, black hat type folks, and maybe ended up with some bad results. Last week, Microsoft convinced a judge to turn over a chunk of IP addresses and domains from Dynamic Domain Hosting Service, NoIP. Now, within those IP addresses were hosted domains that had allegedly been used by Mohammed Ben Abdallah, believed to be living in Algeria, and Nasser Al-Mutari, believed to be living in Kuwait. Now, these two are black hat hackers who have used those domains as vectors for malware infection. So Microsoft claimed that NoIP had not done enough to, protect the internet from the wills of these two hackers. And they convinced a federal judge to give them an order to turn over the IPs and the domains to Microsoft. Their plan was to drop everything onto the Azure cloud,
And as soon as they turn it on, they'd be able to dynamically filter the good traffic from the bad traffic. In other words, they'd be able to serve the almost 14 million customers of NoIP but with Azure service, but blocking any attack traffic, any, say, NTP amplification attack bots. And it all worked perfectly. No, it really didn't. No, I was just kidding about that. Actually, it was a horrible mess.
Wait, really?
Wouldn't it be nice if we could end a story like that? Oh, and it worked. Everything was fine.
Yeah,
Microsoft saved the day.
Went home happily ever after.
No, it didn't. There was no happily ever after. What happened was after Microsoft took control of the NoIP domains, Azure died. They just couldn't handle the sheer volume of traffic coming through the DNS services. Not only that, the dynamic filtering didn't work out. What Microsoft had not counted on was that you would have good traffic and bad traffic coming from the same domain, because a lot of these computers had been compromised. So in blocking off domains that had bad traffic, they were essentially killing off customers of NoIP. Well, just a few days later, Microsoft cried uncle. They turned the domains back over to NoIP, and NoIP is currently turning everybody back on after a big, long blog post about exactly what happened and all the things that they were doing to fix Microsoft's blunder. Now, Mary Jo Foley, why would Azure fold? I mean, yeah, 14 million sites is a lot, but it's designed to handle a lot more than that. There's a lot of horsepower and a lot of scalability in Azure. Even if, as someone suggested, they were getting a billion requests for those 14 million NoIP domains, Azure shouldn't have died.
Shouldn't have.
Oh, okay.
Well. Wow.
I don't know what to say about that one. Yeah, I don't know. You know, sometimes you see Microsoft doing these botnet takedowns and all this, and you're like, yeah, great. This is exactly what they need to be doing. And then when something like this happens, you're saying, well, maybe not exactly that way, or maybe they went a little too far. But yeah, they like you said, best intentions gone awry pretty much on this one. I don't know what to say.
best intentions gone awry is the plot of every horror movie ever made.
It is, right?
Isn't it?
Because yeah. We've had cases like this, but it was early last year. The Fed seized a botnet network and they killed off a ton of malware traffic. Microsoft is hoping to do the same thing, you know. And there, again, their intentions were right, which is maybe NoIP doesn't have the facilities to be able to filter out bad traffic. Well, how about this? We'll take care of their customers. If you sign this order giving us control of their domains and their IPs, we'll drop it onto Azure and everything will be good. You'll kill off two spammers, two malware artists, and everyone will have fantastic service. And they'll hire Microsoft and we'll look good in the press. And then it blew up. I hate to keep whacking Microsoft, but this is one of those blunders that you just kind of shake your head and say, what were you thinking? I mean, taking domains away from a competitor. NoIP is a competitor. They compete in the same space as Microsoft. When would that ever be a good idea?
I don't know. I'm looking at Ars Technica right now, and they're saying Microsoft has formally settled the legal differences with NoIP now over this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's definitely got to be some settlement there because NoIP had to work overtime.
Yeah, I'm sure they gave them some Star Simple servers.
And it was all good after that.
No, they said, hey, you know what? We'd like to offer you 1,000 free licenses for Microsoft 365 Essentials.
There you go. They're like, wait, which one is that again?
Yeah, which one? We're confused.
Wait, did we just get ripped off? What is this thing we disagreed to?
We own business, right? No, not business. Is it pro? No, I can't remember. Sorry.
Jeez.
Oh, wait. Cleansing breath.
Okay.
This has been a bad week for Microsoft, I think. Aside from two announcements about enterprise products, it wasn't a good week.
I don't know if I'd say it was a bad week.
Microsoft does have good weeks. I mean, there's a reason why I still use Microsoft products. Just this one seemed to be really – anywhere I looked, I kept having to report on bad Microsoft stuff.
I'd give them a mixed grade for the week. Like I think it was great that everybody gets Surface firmware updates this week because a lot of people, especially some of the Surface RT users were saying they're forgetting about us. So at least we get an update, right?
True.
And Office 365, I think some of these pricing, the pricing on some of these plans is going to be really very interesting for customers and potential customers. But they just need to make it a little simpler. So I think they're going in the right direction. I wouldn't say it was a bad week, but I would say there's always room for improvement.
Yeah, and if that you really want to put a positive spin on it. I'm sorry. I was just going to say, you know, from our perspective, Mary Jo and I especially, their inability to communicate effectively has given us great careers. So, you know, thanks.
That's actually the episode in a nutshell, because both the saving the internet and the Office 365 confusion, it's both just the inability to communicate. Good intentions, both of them. And actually, Mary Jo, some of the pricing, I think you're dead on. Some of the pricing is actually very good. It's very attractive. It's just not very well communicated. I think if Microsoft had approached the let's save the internet with a bit more honesty and a bit more a little less, this will absolutely fix it. But come to the open source community and say, hey, is this a solution? They would have looked like heroes.
They actually have a pretty good track record for this kind of thing. I mean, and they've had enough legal successes taking down botnets and so forth that I think that this just kind of surprised them. And it's Microsoft. I mean, I think the one thing everyone needs to understand is that they never forget and they learn their lesson and they'll always reference this and going forward. I mean, I don't mean to say there won't be any other stupidity along these lines in the future, but this will inform everything they do like this going forward. They'll never not remember this and not take this kind of thing into consideration. So
Paul,
it's weird and it's too bad, but
I live in constant hope that
all we can do is try to improve, you know,
one day someone at Microsoft will wake up and go, oh, you know what? Let's not do that.
Well, someone at Microsoft probably does wake up and say that every day, but you know, it's getting the rest of the guys to go.
And he forgets it by the time he gets to the office.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the picks of the week. We've got actually a nice slate here.
Yeah, I was asking Mary Jo before the show about Eric Ligman. I now actually believe that I think I might have talked to him in the context of Small Business Server and possibly even Essentials. I'm not 100% sure, but there's a guy named Eric Ligman who works at Microsoft. He's a good guy, and he is keeping track of the free ebooks that Microsoft offers. And Microsoft actually offers a ton of free books. In fact, he has a list right now of, I guess it's, let's say, it's over 150 free Microsoft ebooks. They're available in PDF, Mobi, and EPUB, usually always in PDF. And just a wide range of topics, you know, Windows 8.1 for IT professionals, Windows 8.1 deployment and planning guide, et cetera. It goes on and on and on. Lots of Windows 8.1, Office 365. They'll have to update those because they just changed everything. Office just goes on and on and on. And so I've got a link to this in the show notes. I tweeted about it. I should probably write something up about this. But this is an amazing, amazing resource of just absolutely free, largely high quality books about Microsoft products and technologies, and all in one place, you know, and done by an individual at Microsoft. Why Microsoft doesn't have a URL called Microsoft.com/books, I don't know, but here it is.
They might need to communicate that better.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. It's like it's a kind of an endemic problem they have. So check that out. Anyway, I'll tweet it again. It's such a great resource. And then on the software pick side, I actually have three, so I'll try to burn through these a little quickly. But the first one is a new video editing app for Windows Phone 8.1 specifically. In fact, I've since found out it may be specifically for Lumia devices, for Nokia devices, that was just published by Microsoft Mobile, which is the former Nokia. It allows you to do on-device editing of videos that you've taken with the phone. So you can take a little home movie, you can edit it. It is a fantastic app, and it has a wide range of functionality, all kinds of things you can do to videos right on the app. And then, of course, you can use Windows Phone to share them however you share things. This is an amazing app, and especially if you have a bigger screen device, hopefully like an Icon, a 930, or a 1520, it's especially good. But I was editing video actually on a smaller device this morning as well. It's very nice. So check that out if you can. Number two, the Twitter app was updated for Windows Phone. And this is for all versions of Windows Phone, I believe, 7.5, 8, and 8.1. And I'm having a hard time keeping track of this in my head, but I believe that this is I could be wrong about this one, but I believe this is the first public version of the Twitter app that supports the new social extensibility framework in Windows Phone 8.1, meaning that this is the version of the app that you need to do the social networking integration if you use Twitter. I think that's true. But regardless of whether or not that's true, it has a bunch of new features. So no matter which version of Windows Phone you're using, you can do things like upload multiple photos in a single tweet, you know, tag your friends in a photo and that kind of stuff. So a bunch of enhancements there. Obviously, it's free. And what else do I have? This one I haven't tried yet, but I saw that Microsoft recommended this today or yesterday maybe. As we move forward to cloud-based solutions for everything, we start to leave behind things that a lot of people are really attached to. So, for example, there are people who have like their carefully crafted MP3 collections that they have fine-tuned themselves on their PC, and they like to move them from device to device. They don't want it up in the cloud because, you know, Xbox Video or Xbox Music maybe screws up the metadata. They don't trust other services, whatever it may be. And so they kind of miss the Zune software. Or they're the Media Center folks who love having a Media Center PC in their living room, and they have their various over-the-air or cable card type connections so they can record shows and so forth in HD. And they love that kind of stuff. They don't want cloud services necessarily like Netflix or Hulu Plus or whatever. This free app for I believe it's for Windows and Windows Phone, Windows 8 meaning Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 Plus, kind of speaks to this audience where you're someone who has a lot of content on a PC or in a Media Center PC, on a home server even probably, although again, I haven't actually tried it yet. It's called On Air Player. It's not made by Microsoft, but it was recommended by Microsoft. And what it allows you to do is you install the app on a PC, say some Media Center PC that you have a bunch of media on. And then from a Windows phone or from a tablet or from a laptop or whatever, you can access that collection over the home network. And of course, you know, back in the day, this was very common functionality. But you can do this, you know, through Windows Media Player and all kinds of other things. But this is it's a modern app that runs on modern Windows platform, you know, Metro platform. And it you know, obviously supports touch and all that kind of stuff. And it's sort of a modern take on a classic way of centralizing your media storage somewhere in the house on some PC with storage, and then getting it out to your TV or getting it out to your tablet up in a kid's bedroom or getting it out to your phone if you're sitting on the couch or whatever it is. And I'm going to check it out this week. I haven't looked at it yet. I wanted to throw it out and not forget about it. And hopefully this will meet the need for some people who have, you know, moved on to Windows 8 because they have to or because they, you know, they're just, you know, they're Microsoft guys. You move along, but you kind of miss some of that old school stuff, or maybe you just have those big collections sitting on a PC somewhere. So something to check out. It's called On Air Player.
Actually, I think I just downloaded it right now.
Very cool. Yeah, nice. Be careful clicking on links.
Oh, okay. Sorry. No, I mean, it does kind of remind me of the old school media Windows player days, having a nice little storage box in the basement that you could just pull everything up to. That's not a bad model. Mary Jo Foley. Oh, sorry.
Nope, you're right. That's all. I'm agreeing.
Yep. Mary Jo Foley with your enterprise pick of the week.
Yes, my enterprise pick of the week is for U.S. government, whether you're a federal, state, or a local users. And if you are, and you also happen to be interested in Microsoft Dynamics CRM Online, which is Microsoft's hosted CRM product, you may be very interested in something they're building for launch in the first quarter of 2015. What this is the Dynamics CRM Online for Government Cloud. And if you're kind of curious how this works, Microsoft already has very similar models of this for Office 365. They have an Office 365 Government Cloud. And for Azure, the one for Azure is still in preview. What it is a kind of isolated version, but still multi-tenant of CRM Online in this case, that's operated only by U.S. citizens. It has all kinds of government compliance, like with the FedRAMP standard, for example, for the CRM product. And it's meant to be more secure, more locked down, and more tuned to people who are government customers. So this is one of the things that Microsoft's going to talk about next week at the partner conference, but they gave us a little preview of it today in advance. They're going to be really talking this up to their partners at the show. because they're trying to sell this as another way to get more government customers into Microsoft's hosted offerings like Azure, Office 365, and CRM. So yeah, that's my enterprise pick of the week. I think it's I don't have a date when it's going to go into public preview or private preview. I asked, but I haven't heard back. But Q1 2015 is supposedly the launch of this.
Is that tied together at all with the transparency centers that Microsoft built out? Because it sounds like they're hitting the same sectors and actually probably the same cities. This idea of Microsoft is willing to let any government agency take a peek at the code to make sure that everything is on the up and up with their services.
You know what? I don't know, but I wonder now that you've said that if it is tied in.
All right. Codename pick of the week?
Codename pick of the week is something that's been a codename pick before. It's codename Oslo. And what this is, it's going to be a Office 365 app coming out later this year. And what it is, the easy way to think about it is, it's kind of like Flipboard for Office 365. So it helps you find information about a lot of different things and see it in a very graphical view. So you can have things like contact cards, documents you found or need to access when you're in a meeting. And it's all presented to you in a very nice kind of experience, as Microsoft likes to call it. And the reason it's the codename pick of the week today, again, is Microsoft announced today that the final name of Oslo is going to be Delve, D-E-L-V-E, which we predicted on Windows Weekly a few episodes ago. So nice to see we were right on that. And I'd like to add, anybody who's interested in this or kind of wanting to keep up with it, there's a new Twitter account, @OfficeDelve, all one word, that you can follow to get updates as Microsoft starts bringing this out and making it available to testers, which I don't think it is yet. It may be very soon, but not yet.
Nice. Now, my favorite part of the show, even though I don't drink beer, I love to hear you talk about beer picks. Now, I will confess, I was a little confused when I saw the doc because all I could see was Prima pills. And I thought, you can take like beer pills? What? And I realized, oh, Pilsner. Got it. Okay.
Pilsner. Got it. Great. Yep. So my beer pick of the week this week is a style of beer I don't normally drink and don't normally like very much, a Pilsner. But it's such a great summer beer. And the one I picked is from Victory Brewing in Pennsylvania. It's called Prima Pils. And if you're going to drink a Pils, this one is definitely one of the best ones. It's somewhat hoppy for a Pils. Not really crazy hoppy, though. And just really nice, easy drinking, 5.3% ABV. Very, very good. And it's also considered a German Pilsner. So I don't want to rub any salt in wounds after what happened in the World Cup this week. But yeah, it's a German Pilsner. We'll leave it at that.
It's what we would call a dominant Pilsner.
Well, you can get seven of those for every one Brazilian beer you can get. So
it's there you nice. Go. No, I don't want to insult our Brazilian listeners or make them feel any worse than they already
do. No, that was brutal. I was rooting against Brazil the entire tournament, but
it was almost as exciting as a baseball game.
Oh, hey, stop.
See, it was like a hockey game broke out there for a second.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Now, I actually have a beer pick of the – actually, it's a beer tech pick of the week. I saw this, and I immediately thought of Windows Weekly. This is from Gizmodo. Evidently, the Minnesota Twins will be getting the very first beer vending machine for a U.S. sports team. Now, the customers will first have to visit a manned register and show ID in order to purchase a prepaid debit card for either $10, $20, or $50. Then they can visit any of the draft-serve vending machines that are located around the park. So the idea is you check your ID once, and then you never have to stand in line. You just go to a vending machine, plug it in, and get your beer. Now, they have four
it's
different
like a
types of beer.
Frequent flyer program for alcoholics.
Exactly. So, you know, so no one can check to see if you're drunk. You just keep going. No, but you can have the choice of four different beers ranging in price from 38 cents an ounce for Bud Light, also known as water, or 40 cents an ounce for pale ale. And Alex, if you could take a look, this is actually what it looks like. This is the draft serve machine. Now, the funny thing about this is you still need a man booth in order to sell the cards and check IDs, and they still have people who watch the machines to make sure that no underage drinkers will just borrow cards from somebody else. So it's not completely automated. But here's what I was thinking, Mary Jo. Combine that with this. This is a pizza vending machine. Now, when I say pizza vending machine, I don't mean that it like microwaves frozen pizzas. I mean that this thing, after you choose with, you know, just like a soda machine, you choose your type of pizza. It will make the pizza from the raw ingredients stored inside the vending machine.
Oh, man.
You will see it mix the flour and then grind it up and then turn it into a little crust and put the tomato.
Whatever you make a pizza. Like, is that slot there for the pizza?
Yeah, it just slides it right out.
But how long does this take?
It's 2.5 minutes for it to make the pizza, and then another 5 minutes or so for it to cook the pizza.
Doesn't seem like that's what you want to stand around in a vending machine.
No, but this is food art.
Food art.
Think about that.
Wow.
Yeah. Look, I'm just thinking if you put this next to a beer vending machine, you are going to sell so much beer.
You would.
I'm just thinking this could be a business model maybe for Microsoft.
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
Internet of Things. I can see it. It can run Windows embedded.
There's your pizza. And you get to see your pizza cook. And you know, it's not the food per se. It's the ability to actually see a robot make a pizza. That's entertainment.
It's the experience.
It is the experience. There you go. So book it now. That's the future of food and entertainment at ballparks.
Yikes.
Well, Mary Jo Foley, Paul Thurrott, did we miss anything? Was there any news that we should have included that we didn't? That any errata, anything that slipped between the cracks?
Yes.
There is?
There is.
Probably.
Next week, we mentioned a couple times, Paul and I are going to be in Washington, D.C. for the Worldwide Partner Conference. And we're going to have a tweet up on Tuesday night. It's going to be at the City Tap House, which is really close to the convention center. You can walk over there no matter how hot it is in D.C. next week. We're going to be there starting.
It will be hot.
It will be hot. We're going to be there starting at 4 p.m. You don't need to RSVP. You do have to pay for your own beer. Sorry. But they have a really great beer list. It's citytaphousedc.com if you want to look it up. And come over and join us. We're going to be there 4 till maybe 6:30, 7, who knows.
I'm going to have a sidebar conversation about the Office 365 SKUs, and
which
be needing to drink.
Yes, so that conversation always goes better when drunk.
Yep.
Oh, and we're still trying to work the logistics out on this, but we are likely to be taping Windows Weekly live from the partner conference, but we only have about 20 seats in the audience. So we may do some kind of a raffle at the tweet up to see if anybody wants the tickets for us taping it live from the convention.
That's a good way to do it, right? A raffle.
Yeah, maybe a raffle.
Now, I love D.C. I lived there for 4 years, but I will say that just remember that D.C. was a swamp. They drained a swamp. And in the summer, it becomes a swamp again. Prepare yourself.
D.C. in the summer, hot. you can see and you can bite the air.
That's true.
Thick.
That's not a joke. Yeah. If you lived in an air-conditioned house in D.C., which you have to because otherwise you would die. But when you open that front door, you feel it. It just hits you in the face, and suddenly all your clothes are wet.
Yep.
Mostly from humidity.
Yeah.
Yes, mostly.
Paul Thurrott is the mastermind behind the Supersite for Windows at winsupersite.com. You can pick up one of his books, chocked full of secrets and tips about everything you need to know about Microsoft at Windows81book.com. Be sure to get a copy of his Windows 8.1 field guide. And soon, I've been told, I have on good authority, that his Surface book will be ready to go. That you're putting the finishing touches on that, right, Paul?
I'm putting the starting touches on it. This is going to be a little while. So it'll be written over the course of the summer, I think.
Okay, well, maybe you can take the humidity from D.C. and pack that in there.
Yep.
Mary Jo Foley is at allaboutmicrosoft.com, ZDNet blog, and can be found wherever discerning blog readers go for their news about Microsoft. You can find both of them here.
You were adopting a Thurston Howell the Third accent there. Is that what I was hearing?
Yeah.
You can't sit in this chair without doing that. I think
hey, lovey.
It just strikes you. You can find both of them each week here. At Twit TV on Wednesdays, 11 o'clock Pacific, 2 o'clock Eastern, 1800 UTC. And if you're free, you can always join us live at live.twit.tv. Go ahead and watch the pre-show, the post-show. See all the things that we take out of the final cut.
And as long as you're watching live, jump into our chat room at irc.twit.tv. You can communicate with the host. You can talk to me. You actually see myself and Leo pulling comments out of the chat room because it's part of the experiment that is Twit TV. It's not just a network. It's a community. If you can't join us live, you can find Windows Weekly anywhere quality podcasts are aggregated, Stitcher, iTunes, or any number of apps will have Twit programming built into it. And of course, you'll find every episode of Windows Weekly here at twit.tv/ww. Leo Laporte will be back next week. I promise this time. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.
Oh, and just one more thing. I don't remember what the topic was for this, but I had this queued up, and I don't remember what you guys were talking about with this reference, but I had this ready to go, and I just couldn't put it in.
Prosper, it was the needs of the many outweigh the needs
right.
of the
one.
Oh,
that's right. But that's what they talk in this scene.